Hi, I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. There are many more podcasts available online at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us here for this edition of Cradle My Heart Radio, where, as you know, our mission, our ministry, is preventing abortion and helping those whom it hurts. And as we think about that first part of what it is that we're seeking to do, prevent abortion, there are many, many ways that we can do this, and the pro-life movement is working on many, many fronts. Frontline ministry and the pregnancy help movement, offering material support and care for the woman who is facing the decision right now. At a broader level, keeping you informed on what's happening at the level of policy and legislation. And this is as important as what happens at that front line. And then, of course, as you know, we do offer the love of God to help in the healing journey after abortion, because not everybody will be reached with the truth. And you need to know, if you're new to the program, that a big part of my motivation is that I did not know the truth when I made that decision. And it is something that I took many, many years to recover from. And the love of God extends to this problem in our lives as well. Repentance is a beautiful thing, because redemption stands as God makes all things new in Jesus Christ, even after abortion. And so the purpose when we take a look at policy is never to condemn. The purpose is never to, as some on the opposition might say, harm women, take women's rights, in some way limit the freedoms of women. This is how the conversation has been couched. But instead, what we are endeavoring to do is to present the truth that all life is precious in God's sight, and that women are best served when we help them understand that it is possible to love and nourish the children that God has placed in our lives. So as we think about the Supreme Court's decision to ignore the clear evidence that some abortion facilities risk women's health, the Supreme Court made this ruling in Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt that the Texas law seeking to protect women from shoddy operators and from substandard care was unconstitutional. And Bruce Hoskonecht of Focus on the Family is joining us to talk about this and to help us understand the value of this ruling, what to do in the wake of the ruling, and how best to really answer it from a godly point of view. Bruce, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me on today.
So in a nutshell, for those who weren't following the case, tell us what happened at the Supreme Court late in the month of June.
Yes. In a 5-3 decision, the Supreme Court struck down a Texas law that was designed to protect women undergoing abortions. Basically, the law required abortion facilities to have the same standards as other outpatient surgery facilities in the state of Texas. They also required abortionists to have admitting privileges in nearby hospitals in case there was an emergency or follow-up care needed for the woman who was undergoing the abortion. Now, the law was prompted by the Gosnell story from Philadelphia. Most everyone is familiar these days with the atrocity there, where a clinic was run so shoddily and shamefully that a woman died during an abortion procedure, as well as three infants who were born alive who then died because of the maltreatment at this clinic. That prompted a criminal investigation, and Gosnell and several employees were convicted in 2013 on a variety of serious crimes. Now, the grand jury that investigated Gosnell recommended the types of law that Texas then passed, as have about a dozen other states. Even before Gosnell, they had been passing these laws. They're designed to keep these types of horror stories from happening again. But by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, they're looking at, okay, we understand that that's the design, you know, design here, but we're not taking that at face value. Even though the state legislature had fact-finding hearings and decided that this was necessary, we're going to second-guess the legislature by testimony from pro-abortion factions and Planned Parenthood and everybody else that says, you know, this is going to make it tougher for women in Texas to actually get an abortion. They may have to drive farther to get there, and we don't know if the remaining facilities who haven't gone out of business rather than upgrade, we don't know if the remaining facilities can handle it. Therefore, we've created, or Texas has created, an undue burden on the right of abortion. That was the buzz phrase created back in 1992 by the Supreme Court in the Casey case. So essentially, the Supreme Court second-guessed the Texas legislature and appointed themselves as the medical board for the United States in terms of deciding whether this law was medically necessary to protect women. And that's what happened on Monday. And by Wednesday, the court had turned away two more appeals from Wisconsin and Mississippi, whose similar laws had been struck down by federal court. So in 1 week, we've had three states laws designed to protect women struck down because of the actions of the Supreme Court.
And, you know, Bruce, this is, to me, what people really need to understand about this. And you've given us a great thumbnail sketch there that right away I know many people don't know this story. First of all, the media was derelict in their duty in telling the Kermit Gosnell story, even when those convictions came down. What happened is Kaimana Mungar, a poor woman immigrant, was killed at this abortion facility by somebody who gave her anesthesia improperly. She was still alive when the EMTs arrived, but they couldn't get the gurney in to save her because the hallways were too narrow. This is the type of regulation that Texas put in place. Texas said, not here, not on our watch, and the other states that you've mentioned. But instead of heeding that, these five justices decided that they would listen to, as you said, people who claimed that, oh, these were simply people trying to chip away at a woman's right to choose abortion. It's incredible, and I wonder what now will happen for states that want to try to regulate the safety of abortion. You know, I mean, there's the states have to be able to protect the people who are living in their states. What do you see as next on the horizon?
I foresee a lot of lawsuits filed against states who, over the past decade or so, or maybe two decades since the Casey versus Planned Parenthood case, I see a lot of lawsuits going to be filed by pro-abortionists against existing state laws. I think Cecile Richards from Planned Parenthood has already predicted that they're going to go after a lot of these laws based on what the Supreme Court did this week. And they're going to say, look, if it reduces access to abortion, that outweighs the concern over health of these women, in effect. So in the short term, I think we're going to see a lot of those state laws attacked in court going forward. Long term, what the Supreme Court did was make it very difficult for states to have to guess what types of laws are going to pass muster at the Supreme Court level. They've created this undue burden standard, which is only known to five justices on the Supreme Court. If they see a law and it strikes them as being undue, they'll strike it down. But that doesn't help any of the 50 state legislatures in advance to know what is going to be upheld and what's going to be struck down. So it creates mass confusion and mass uncertainty in terms of states who do, as you stated, have the right and the duty to protect the health and safety of its citizens.
Bruce, House Connect is our guest. He's the judicial analyst for Focus on the Family, and we're talking about the Supreme Court decision, which turned back a Texas law seeking to regulate abortion facilities and their safety for the women of Texas. And Bruce, as we think about this, you know, this crossroads where we find ourselves, I know that many people say, well, look, if you're against abortion, why would you be, you know, working for safer abortion? But some of the facts that people don't know that led up to this case. First of all, there's this myth, and it's been debunked many times, but I think it's maybe worth a part of the conversation today. There's this myth that abortion is safer than childbirth. That is simply not true, but it was repeated in this case. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think, based a portion of her remarks in the consensus that would be true. The other thing that people don't realize is that 400 women that we know of have been killed in legal abortions since 1973. That's 9 a year. That's almost a monthly occurrence. In the year that Kayamana Mungar died in 2009, I think there were 8 other abortion-related fatalities. People don't understand that, you know, people assume, as I did, Bruce, when I chose abortion at 23, and by the way, it was not a reasoned and informed decision. It was a desperate, quick decision. And I assumed this was, you know, a medical facility and it was going to be safe. And I assumed because it was legal, I didn't need to think about it. You know, so if regulation is now out of the hands of the state that, you know, is allowing people to operate and do these procedures, what guarantees do women have that our safety is being monitored by anyone? You know, I think if you can just talk about, you know, some of the fatalities that have happened, some of the true risk that is there to, you know, expose this rhetoric that pro-life people are warring on women somehow, when in fact it's abortion that is putting women's lives at risk.
Yes, you're exactly right. And you know, I subscribe to the listservs where I receive reports from various places of an abortion facility having to call the EMTs in because an abortion has gone wrong and a woman's life is in jeopardy. And what really gets me about some of these stories is not simply that they're putting women in danger because of their shoddy practices, but they want to disguise everything. The last story I read even said that the 911 call requested that the ambulance turn off its siren a couple blocks away from the abortion facility. Now, why would they ask that? And it seems obvious why. They don't want any association between a medical emergency and the what goes on behind those closed doors at the abortion clinic. So it hurts my heart to see women put in jeopardy who are entrusting themselves to people they assume are top quality doctors and nurses who have only their health and safety in mind, and they're not in a mental state where they can, you know, research who these people are and what their degrees are and what medical licenses they have, and have the facilities been inspected in the last year and all of that. That's why states have to step in and do all that. You know, the irony in the Texas case is that Planned Parenthood didn't join in that case. And the reason being is because Planned Parenthood facilities in Texas already meet the standards that the new Texas law required. Now, if Planned Parenthood can meet that, it it doesn't seem as if the rest of the abortion industry can suddenly claim that's undoable. That'll drive us out of business. And so I think in the case, Justice Alito was very skeptical from the bench during oral arguments as to why these clinics were closing. It seemed like a lot of them were closing anyway due to retirements of the abortionists and for other financial reasons, just because the demand for abortions is down everywhere, including Texas. And so they used this kind of fake argument that all these clinics were going out of business simply because they couldn't afford the cost to upgrade. That was kind of nonsense, and Planned Parenthood proved it, although they're the strongest critic of the Texas law. So it's almost a knee-jerk reaction to any type of desire by the state to protect women, as opposed to what's on the bottom line for these abortionists who are making money hand over fist.
And as we think about this, and what we can do, it really points up the importance of whoever the next president will be. And so let's talk about this. I mean, people who aren't following these cases very closely, and it's tough, to know the ins and outs and to know all the context and connect all the dots. But, and we hear this, that it's important that we support candidates who are going to appoint justices who will uphold our values. So I want to give you the opportunity to help us understand that one more time, Bruce Hausknecht.
I'd be glad to.
In the current election cycle.
Just at the federal level alone, there are almost 1,000 federal judges in the federal system, at the district court level, appellate court level, and at the Supreme Court. You add them all up together, about 1,000 judges. In a two-term presidency, a president will have the opportunity to fill over 300, almost a third of those thousand seats because of retirements, deaths, and what have you. So the judges that the president picks are hugely important, because there are vastly different types of judicial philosophies that judges employ. Basically, we have the Scalia and the Alitos, who believe that the founders' intent in what they passed really should be the driving consideration today. If the Constitution doesn't mention abortion, then the Supreme Court's got no right to create it. But then on the other hand, there's the opposite judicial philosophy that says, it doesn't matter what was written in the Constitution. That's so long ago. They didn't know about modern medicine, et cetera. And therefore, we have a living Constitution, and we ought to be able to adapt it through judicial decisions to meet our changing times. And the two parties basically favor one or the other judicial philosophy. So who we pick for the presidency and who we pick for senators, who are the people who will say yay or nay to a presidential nomination, they are extremely important to both the future of the Supreme Court and all the federal courts and all the issues that we hold dear, including the issue of life. So when you go into the ballot box this November, you may be voting for a senator or a president based on economics, but you have to consider that the control they have over the federal judicial appointments is more important than a short-term economic issue, because these federal judges, they are there for life. They have earned lifetime appointments because that's how the Constitution is set up. And so those judges will serve for decades before they decide to retire. The judicial appointments are critical to what we're seeing in D.C. now and what's happening in Texas and other states today. And the election is what drives those court decisions. So we have to, as Christians, we have to be mindful of the cause and effect of who we vote for.
Bruce Hausknecht is an attorney, serves as Focus on the Family's judicial analyst, and he also is I've been providing legal analysis and commentary for top media outlets, including CNN and ABC News, NBC News, CBS Radio. He practiced law for 17 years in construction litigation as an associate general counsel for a large ministry in Virginia, and also was associate pastor at a church in Colorado Springs for 7 years, primarily in worship music ministry. Bruce Housekonnect, our guest today. And Bruce, so as we think about going forward, the importance of having an effective answer to those who say that abortion is a women's rights issue, I think about the fact that, and I know Focus on the Family has led the way on this, you know, if we stay focused on abortion as a women's health issue and not also on advancing the truth and proactively proclaiming that a fetus equals a baby, equals an equally valuable human being, we could end up, you know, winning battles and losing the war. I mean, we have to help people understand that these are not competing rights claims. These are two human beings with equal human rights. And so, you know, from your background as, you know, having a heart for ministry as well as your training in the law, how best do you really feel to accomplish that part of the mission?
Well, as Christians, we all know that God knows us from the minute we're conceived. You know, he mentions about to Jeremiah, you know, that he knew him from his womb, and you know, Psalm 139, you know, about I formed you in your inward parts before there was even your first day on earth. And so as Christians, we know that God considers us a life from the instant of conception. And the problem is translating that into a public policy. You know, what we needed originally, when we had the opportunity after Roe versus Wade, was to get a human life amendment passed in Congress, and that would clarify what we know to be true, and that is that a fetus is a baby, is a human life from the instant of conception. And so we as a movement failed to achieve that back in the 70s and 80s, and it kind of fell by the wayside. So now we're left with a society that's probably even less prone to creating the majorities needed to protect life in that way. So Christians have to continue to be vocal, continue to run for office and articulate the principles that are set forth as truth throughout the ages in the Word of God, and do so in a way that's winsome to a secular culture who doesn't understand the Word of God or why they should take anything you say from the Bible as truth. It's a particularly difficult ministry we have as citizens of a nation as well as citizens of a heavenly kingdom. So I would just offer encouragement not to give up, that every time Congress or a state legislature makes a law, there is some moral component to it. And so it makes a difference who passes those laws and whose morality is reflected in those laws, and we cannot simply hand over the reins of civil government to people who are actively in rebellion against God. So it's a fine line to do that in culture and be winsome about doing it, but that is our duty as Christ followers and as people who want to see the gospel go forward. We have to defend life and do it in a way that convinces our fellow citizens who maybe don't even believe in God. So that would be my word for Christians today.
And you know, the idea that there are competing rights here, if we boil it down to that, I think that especially with the next generation and their concern for inclusiveness and equality, do you think it's fair to say that if we accept on its face that but there are two lives in every pregnancy, but that we're going to grant the woman the right to decide what happens to both of those lives. That really, that what we're doing is we're sanctioning oppression on the part of these women, because we're saying they have the right to unilaterally remove a life, not just, you know, obliterate the rights of the other person, but to actually obliterate that life. Do you think that that's a fair way to characterize what's really happening in abortion?
Absolutely fair. You know, there is a hierarchy of rights, and the ultimate right, as recognized, you know, by Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence, was the right to life. And we recognize that as an inalienable right because it's part of what made America great from the very beginning, was our freedom, our basis in a belief in God. And if you believe in God, then you have to believe in the right to life.
Bruce, House Connect Judicial Analyst for Focus on the Family, thank you so much for joining us to help us understand the whole women's health and Hellerstedt decision at the Supreme Court.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on, Kim.
And now stay with us. Coming up on Faith Radio, we will open the phone lines for your calls. Our number is 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
And thank you so much for making Cradle My Heart part of your Sunday night listening. You're listening, I'm listening, and we're here for you. Our phones are open right now. We're live at 1-800-811-3003. I'm Kim Cotola, and so glad that you really did make us a part of your week. Sunday nights, the week wraps up. We look forward to the week ahead, and I appreciate you being willing to think through these issues that are so important. They are, it's the preeminent moral issue of our time. It affects every single one of us in America. What are we doing for the weakest members of the human family? In our laws, in our policies, in our actions, in our hearts. It starts in our hearts. And so that's what we try to talk about every week. And tonight we're going to do a little bit of a follow-up to the featured interview that we just aired with Bruce Housekonect from Focus on the Family, with judicial analysis of how the Supreme Court set itself up as a medical board. We have an inside look as to how that really happened and whose medical research they relied upon in making the decision to overturn Texas's law to try to establish safety standards in abortion facilities. We're going to talk about that. But I want to start off tonight at 1-800-811-3003 with a question that was on a lot of people's minds this week. Started getting buzz last weekend with the announcement of the vice presidential candidate, Tim Kaine, for the Democratic Party. And really, we don't deal with abortion as a political issue. So I'm not trying to go there, but his candidacy and his statements about being personally pro-life but voting pro-choice, some people said that's because you can't get elected as a Democrat unless you say that you will vote pro-choice, even if you're personally opposed to it. What do you think about this? Being personally opposed to something, but then taking a job that requires you to do it. 1-800-811-3003. Have you been having conversations in your circle about this? 1-800-811-3003. Because, I mean, we could, if we take it outside of the current election cycle and we look at it as a matter of personal ethics taken into the public square, it's a really interesting question. It's a question that pertains not only to abortion, but really in this election cycle, how you're going to vote. You know, if you're personally opposed to something a candidate says he's standing for, but you know that that candidate will be obliged to do something else that you feel must be done. I mean, how are you resolving these ethical questions in your mind and in your conversations with the people close to you? 1-800-811-3003 is our number, and our phones are open for you tonight. And as always, when you call, we do have pro-life resources for you. We love to help you become better educated on the question of pro-life. And we offered a little book last week that we're going to offer again tonight because it's a really helpful resource. It's called, well, it's written by Scott Klusendorf and John Ensor. And these are two of the most influential voices among people who approach pro-life from an apologetic standpoint as well as from a pastoral standpoint. And not just pastoral, but they're working with pregnancy help centers and they're training and equipping and really pouring themselves out for the sake of the unborn, but also for our sake. Because it really matters in the day-to-day and it matters eternally where we come down in our answers on these questions. So they're doing some great teaching and training, and they have a book for youth called Stand for Life, A Student's Guide for Making the Case and Saving Lives by Scott Klusendorf and John Ensor. So you call with a question or a comment, and we'll get you a copy of this great book, Stand for Life. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, 1-800-811-3003. Can you be personally vegan but vote with the meat party? That was what got expressed in one conversation. And if you're personally opposed to something, does that even matter if you go ahead and vote to make that thing legal? 1-800-811-3003. Am I making it too simple? Is it more complex than that? Is there more ethical shading to it that would allow a person for a greater good to vote for something that they're really against in their hearts? 1-800-811-3003. I would just love to hear your thoughts and opinions on that because, I mean, I know where I stand, and I got into a very lively discussion with someone who said that, you know, the orthodoxy of certain political parties means you cannot say that you will vote a certain way on certain things and survive within that party. So the question then becomes, what are you doing in that party? I don't know. Again, am I making that too simple? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. And really what we're hoping to discuss here is the ethics at the heart of it, not necessarily the politics, because we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and so we cannot take political stands. We cannot endorse candidates, and that's not what I'm hoping to do. You're free to express your opinion when you call the show here at Cradle My Heart Radio, but we're really helping you think through where you stand on this. And part of the reason why I have the viewpoint that I have is that I used to occupy that territory. I had an abortion at 23. I didn't think about whether it was right or wrong before I made the decision. Immediately before it happened, I knew in my heart and conscience that it was wrong, but I went through with it anyway for various reasons. But that meant that afterwards, I felt a great deal of guilt. And I also felt a great deal of guilt because I had so much grief over the missing family member, my child. But I couldn't say any longer that I was pro-choice, but I didn't really know anything about what it meant to be pro-life. I didn't know anything. If anything, I had a stereotyped view of angry people with signs or, you know, someone who is just political all the time. So I would say, well, I'm not in favor of abortion, but I can't tell other people what to do. I mean, that's another version of I'm against abortion, but I would vote for a candidate or I would vote with the party. Is it? I don't know. It seemed so to at least one person who he'd heard me speak out and approached me and said that she was going to pray for me because she didn't believe that it was a morally consistent point of view. I thought about that for a long time. And I changed my mind over time for various reasons, but I want to hear how it's playing out in your heart. 1-800-811-3003. And again, tonight for our callers, a copy of Stand for Life by John Ensor and Scott Klusendorf. 1-800-811-3003. How do you resolve this tension about the morality of abortion and the legality of abortion? And maybe that's the best way to frame it. Can you say, I think it's immoral, but it should stay legal? I mean, I know people who feel that way. Maybe that's the question. Is that how you feel? And would you be willing to discuss that with us? That you think it's immoral, but you feel it should be legal? 1-800-811-3003. Call and share your thoughts with us. I wanted to I also wanted to talk about tonight this research on the research. Mother Jones published an article, and it had a headline that really drew me in. It said there are two different headlines for the same story because it was a partnership between Mother Jones and ProPublica, which is a nonprofit journalism outlet owned by the Hewlett Foundation, or else run by the Hewlett Foundation, I should say. And so they released there's a timestamp on the story on the Mother Jones website and on the ProPublica website, and they're exactly the same, and the stories are exactly the same, but they have very different headlines and very different sub-headlines. And so when you go to the Mother Jones story, the headline says, how one abortion research mega donor forced the Supreme Court's hand. And the subhead says, the foundation is known for its secrecy. So this came out July 14th. And by that headline, it sounds like this is a positive thing, that they forced the Supreme Court's hand. I mean, if you are someone who feels as though a mega donor forcing a Supreme Court decision sounds somehow wrong, you might wonder why Mother Jones, which is in the main very much in favor of abortion rights advocacy, would put such a headline out there on the story. So ProPublica, which is the nonprofit, and I guess maybe has at least a veneer of being unbiased, their headline says, and you know where my bias is, I've already told you, right? So I'm not saying any of us is without bias, but the ProPublica headline reads, same story, behind the Supreme Court's abortion decision, more than a decade of privately funded research. The subheadline says, research funded by the Susan Thompson Buffett Foundation and others not only helped spur the nation's top court to strike down key parts of a Texas abortion law, but also has fueled a string of other changes making abortion more accessible. So that's much more fact-based headline and subheadline. And really, as you dig into the story, and it's a wonderful piece of investigative journalism, and I have to say that it actually is pretty fair, because they do go to people on both sides of the issue, people that are stakeholders on either side of the issue, if you will, and get their comments on what has happened with the privatization of science. And that's a phenomenon the New York Times reported on in 2014. And at the time, they noted that it used to be that the United States paid for about 75% of the scientific research that scientists published and looked to for information and for reporting on science. But now, in 2014, that equation has flipped, and there are interest groups funding research. And the interest groups, of course, have agendas. Sometimes it matters, I guess. Sometimes it doesn't. You can be the one to decide whether that's important or not. But as the story reads in Mother Jones, back in January, as the Supreme Court was preparing for its most important abortion case in a generation, some four dozen social scientists submitted a brief explaining why they believed key portions of Texas's law, HB 2, should be struck down. The brief was a 58-page compendium of research on everything from the relative dangers of abortion versus childbirth to the correlation between abortion barriers and postpartum depression. And 6 months later, the material they submitted clearly helped shape Justice Stephen Breyer's majority opinion in Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. Did Justice Breyer know that that was abortion advocacy-funded research he was reading? Did he think that that was objective, scientific, government-funded research? It's an interesting question. We'll talk more about it after a short break. Please join us. Our phones are open tonight at 1-800-811-3003, 1-800-811-3003. Patty, you're coming up next here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
2003 tonight here on Cradle My Heart Radio, discussing the privatization of research and how it affects what is happening at the level of the judicial and legislation activities surrounding keeping abortion legal. There are abortion proponents paying for research findings, and it influenced the Supreme Court. And this is being reported by the very liberal Mother Jones and ProPublica, who worked together on the investigation as to how this all played a part in the recent Supreme Court ruling to overrule Texas abortion facility safety standards. 800-811-3003. There's more to that story, but we're also talking about whether you can think abortion is wrong but still want it to be legal, if there's a problem with that line of thinking, or if it makes perfect sense to you and you want to explain to me how. 1-800-811-3003. Patty, thanks for holding through the break. Go ahead, please. Yeah, you're up on Cradle My Heart Radio.
I'm wondering how many people would say, as many people had to wrestle with back in the 1800s, well, I'm personally opposed to slavery, but I'll vote to keep the laws so that other people can own slaves. Or if they lived at the time of the rise of Hitler in Nazi Germany, would they say, well, I'm personally opposed to killing handicapped and disabled people and Jewish people and gypsies, etc.? But I'll vote for Hitler anyway, because he'll be good for the economy, which he was, I guess, for the German economy. But to me, it's the same situation. I don't understand how anyone could be personally opposed to abortion and believe that that's a living human being and then deny that child its constitutional right to life.
Patty, you have a bracing,
no, logical
a bracing way of presenting truth in such a gentle but clear fashion. Thank you so much, because your analogies, I think, are very fair and they're very true. It's very difficult sometimes to see the moral dilemma before us when we're in it, and I'm sure the people of Nazi Germany had good hearts when they said that. Hold on, and we'll get your address so we can send you a copy of Stand for Life. You know, and I think what happens is, we distance ourselves when we say we're opposed to it, but we won't do anything to stop it. We take ourselves one step away and say it has nothing to do with me, you see. So I can be against it and yet do nothing, which really, I don't know, does that make you for it? 1-800-811-3003. I wrestle with it. I know people who have that opinion, and as I said, I had that opinion for a lot of years. I think the opinion on my part was born out of a defense mechanism, because I didn't want people to know that I'd had an abortion, and that's why I knew it was wrong and was opposed to it. So I didn't feel qualified to fully speak out on it. I know others who say that they're opposed, but they don't want to impose their view on others, particularly younger people. They feel that you know, being judgmental is a much worse sin than being complicit in the death of innocent children. I don't know. Maybe that's too harsh. Is that an overstatement? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. Here's a little bit more from that Mother Jones story. The folks at the Susan Buffett Foundation have spent more than a decade pouring at least $200 million into the scientists' work that the Supreme Court used to make their decision. Mother Jones, without any irony, calls it an influential abortion research complex that has left abortion opponents in the dust, they write. And they go on to say there's little or no publicly funded research on this controversial subject in the United States, so for years basic information was lacking. See, most people don't know that either, that when the Supreme Court ruled, because the legislature's never passed a federal law that abortion should be legal. No, it was a Supreme Court ruling. But when they ruled that it should be legal, they did not regulate it. There's no mandatory reporting at a federal level. The Centers for Disease Control puts out a document from time to time, might be annually, called Abortion Surveillance in the United States. But they rely on voluntary reports from the abortion providers. And the state of California chooses not to report, so it's not a full look at what is happening. So since there's no publicly funded research, and since our government isn't looking into what's actually happening with what our Supreme Court ruled should be legal, the research initiative dates back at least to the early 2000s, and most of the money goes to the University of California, San Francisco. And, they are the folks that say, yes, we'll go ahead and take that money and we'll look into these questions. UCSF has been able to do pioneering studies without the kind of political interference that might be expected elsewhere, or government oversight, I might add. But that's just me. The funder and recipient have been closely intertwined, as the chair of the department that was receiving the money to start the research at UCSF has now become the Buffett Foundation's director of U.S. programs. That happened a couple of years ago. I'm sure there aren't any conflicts there, though. So back to the Supreme Court. The 5-3 majority, this is Mother Jones reporting this, the 5-3 majority ruling in Hellerstedt read like a 38-page recitation of the researchers' findings, Mother Jones says, declaring the Texas law served no real medical purpose and created an undue burden on women's constitutional rights. And then Mother Jones went to Stephanie Toti, an attorney for the Center for Reproductive Rights, which has also received more than $20 million in Buffett funding since 2001. Stephanie Toti says abortion restrictions cannot rely on junk science. 1-800-811-3003. The privatization of science is putting women's lives at risk. When the Supreme Court overturned the law that Texas passed, they said that access was more important than safety. But more than this, I want you to understand that it's a public health crisis because 1 million children die in abortions every year. If there were anything else that was exacting that kind of toll on this next generation of children, wouldn't all of our government's research activity be going to find a way to make that stop? I don't speak from a spirit of condemnation because I am guilty. And except for the blood of Jesus Christ, I have no excuse. And His love covered me, and He's no respecter of persons. His love will cover you if there's an abortion in your past. His love will cover you if there's hatred in your heart toward people who have stood for legal abortion, because hatred is never the way of our Lord. His love will cover you if you've been cruel and insensitive to people who have had abortions, even those who brag it publicly from great big stages. In order to have his love cover us, we have to agree that he is the way. And I pray that you'll do that if you never have, because your life will never be the same. And I can tell you that as a promise. I'm Kim Cotola. If you want to know more about our ministry and find resources and help after abortion, go to cradlemyheart.org, cradlemyheart.org. We always, week in and week out, strive to bring you conversations that help save lives and heal hearts after abortion. And we try to do that one story at a time. Tonight you learned a little bit more of my story, and you heard such eloquent words from Patty, and I hope you take them to heart. I hope that if you're undecided, or if you are still struggling through these questions, that you listen to what she had to say about people who were faced with grave, preeminent moral crises in their day. This is our turn, and this is our time. And when your grandchildren ask you, what did you do, what will you be able to say? Please join us next week. I'm Kim Cotola. Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. Your support makes this podcast stream possible. Information is available at myfaithradio.com.